Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 1,000 comics, best-selling comics through Diamond for all of 2014. And as a bonus, we've got about another 150 or something indie and small press titles scattered below that in non-consecutive things. So we've got the top 1,000 plus a bonus. This is always a very fun, interesting, and challenging episode, Sam, for me to kind of crunch the numbers on.
Absolutely. That's a lot of work.
Oh, well, and it's something for this is a different process than I use for the monthly stuff. A little bit less so this time than normal. Normally, they don't give an index value on the top 1,000 for the year. This year, as they did, I think back in 2010, they actually did that. So I've got what I consider to be fairly accurate estimates for the top 1,000 items and the ones scattered below because of that index value. Don't have to do the usual, well, it sold better than this, and that sold X amount, therefore it had to do at least this much with, you know, so many unreported units and stuff. We're not going to bother with that this year. We're just going to look at how the stuff did. But because this is a process I do once a year, and I'm looking at how all the months do and all that stuff, I've totally forgotten how I did it last year other than whatever notes I happen to hang on to, and it's almost, I don't say a reinventing of the thing, but it's one that's not as robust of a process just because I don't do it as often.
Yeah.
And because this list doesn't normally have the index values, and this is the same spreadsheet I've used in past years, it doesn't have a column for the index values.
Got it.
So I would have to go back to the source data file or one of the interim work files for that.
Do you know what they used as 100?
Yes, I do. Give me just a second.
I'm just interested. I'm assuming it's a Batman. Was it the first
Batman
one of the
37,
year?
It was the last one of the
last
year.
Of the
it
year.
Was the December one, which means if you know how December sold, you can kind of look at that. Now, you can't always do that because sometimes, you know, they do some squirrely things.
No, I just wondered how they picked. It was pretty obvious it was probably going to be Batman since that's what they use anyways.
Yeah.
Did they use January? They used December. They split the difference and used June or July. So they used December.
December. Yeah. Yeah. Which gotcha. Is down at rank 34, I believe it is.
Yep.
So it's, you look at this list, we've got 1,000 items. The top item was Amazing Spider-Man number 1. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. And it totaled up to 559,217 units. And then if we go all the way down to rank 1,000, the bottom of that list then is 28,963 units with all-new Ghost Rider number 3. So we've got a fairly big range here for how these things go. But we actually had a fair number. I think the top 40 all made it above the 100,000 mark.
Yep.
And there were a couple of months, you know, not so much in 2014, but I think there have been some previous years where, you know, we hadn't, I know we had one, I forget which year it was, nothing topped like 73,000. Yep. So having 40 items above the 100,000 mark is by no means, you know, guaranteed from year to year. And I think a lot of the items we had this time, with one or two titles as noticeable exceptions, aren't going to be in this range during 2015.
A lot, probably. There's a lot of Amazing Spider-Man and a lot of Batman.
Ton of Batman. I think every one of the
Harley
Batmans is up
Quinn,
here.
So some of this stuff will stick around.
Some of it. But if you take out Batman, Amazing Spider-Man, maybe not, depending what Marvel does over the course of the year, obviously. But we're not going to have something like the top item doing the over 500,000. You know, Walking Dead 132, I believe that was part of the Loot Crate deal. It did 326,334, which is, you know, unusually high for it. Not unusually high for it. It's unusually high for anything. It's unsustainable. Rocket Raccoon number 1 with 310,999 units. Again, part of a Loot Crate deal. And then we start to hit more, I don't say legitimate, that's not the right word, but more realistic or more normal sorts of stuff, with the Death of Wolverine number one coming in at 274,022 units. Obviously, that miniseries is over. We're not going to see that returning on the list next year. Then we've got a first issue. We've got all four issues of Death of Wolverine up there, but a first issue of Thor, first issue of Original Sin, Avengers X-Men Axis. You know, a little further down the list, all new Captain America number one. A lot of first issues that hit big and then kind of drop off on the list, you know, which is expected. I mean, there's nothing right or wrong about that. It's unfortunate that the first issue is always, almost universally, always the high water mark.
Well, it's interesting. If you filter the list just to Rocket Raccoon.
Okay.
We got six issues this year. The first one, yes, it's insane. Rank three, part of the Loot Crate deal. We all kind of get that. It was 310,990. Mm-hmm. Okay. But then the second issue is all the way down at rank 192. The third issue is at 251, 297, 337, and it's down to rank 596 in six issues. You know, we talk about it month after month, how you can't believe how big some of the drops are. When you can see it year over year like that, it went from rank three to just shy of rank 600 in six issues.
Let's put that into a more objective point of view, because rankings, it depends how everything else does, you know. But since we had an index list, we can actually convert. Again, that first issue sales of Rocket Raccoon as part of the Loot Crate deal, 310,999 units. Number two drops to 63,877 units. Number three drops again to 55,423 units. It bounces up a little in number four with 58,158 units. Drops with number five to below the number three units to 53,294 units. And then at number six, which came out, December 10th, 41,154 units. So it's, closer to 10% of the original sales than 15%. I'd have to actually do the math. I don't have this thing set up to do the issue over issue comparisons here.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but, and like you said, the rankings aren't really objective, but in another way they are, because you do the exact same thing with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going from 3 to 600, it goes from 14 to 85. And if you get rid of the annual, it goes from 14 to 32. That's consistency.
What I find fascinating with Batman is the lowest item in the top 1,000 for it was down at rank 994, and that was reorder activity of issue number 5.
From 2 years ago.
Yeah. I think they're still, apparently still have some copies or whatever and getting that out there.
Yeah.
It did over 29,000 units. I mean, that's, Batman is right now the example of, you know, the stable seller, but the successful title, you know. And you look at the issue numbers as they go down the list in rank order. You've got 32, then the Future's End, then 33, 35, 29, 36, 27, 28, 34, 37, 30, 31, you know, and the annual number 3. So it's not like it's in sequential order.
No, and like I said, you look at the rank order, 14, 15, 18, 19, 20, 22, 20, you know, amazingly stable.
Almost all of them are in the top 30.
I mean, almost, yeah. Like I said, from 14 to 32, you've got them all if you toss the annual.
Mm-hmm. So it's successful title. You know, if you filter the list instead of to Batman, but to Batman Eternal, let me double check this.
Mm-hmm.
These are pretty much in numerical order.
Yes, that is very true.
As you would expect with a weekly title. There's one or two exceptions. I think 30 outsold issue 29 or something like that. But by and large, it slow attrition, you know, and it went from the 112,388 units with that first issue, which was at rank 29 for the year, down to rank 453 for issue 39 with 47,782 units.
But again, this is a weekly title,
mm-hmm,
with 39 issues, and the entire 39 issues are well inside the spread of the six issues of Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
Again, it just the amazing difference in stability.
Well, the weekly pacing, I think, helps. Even when it has a misstep, it's not a big deal, because, hey, just wait a week, you'll get another issue.
Yep.
It didn't have the artificially inflated first issue because of a loot crate kind of deal. And nothing against loot crate. I think those types of deals are really smart for publishers to do.
Absolutely.
It gets the stuff out into more hands. They're not the same sort of sales that every other thing on the charts reflects.
The other thing I find somewhat interesting, whether we're going to call it a gimmick, a stunt, a good business practice, whatever, you know, however you want to put the spin on it. Looking down this list, multiple covers. From 1 to 100, there's like 5 books that don't have multiple covers. They're all Batman, Batman Eternal, or Detective in the top 100. They're the only ones that don't have multiple covers in the top 100. There's like one issue of Detective, 2 Batman, and a couple of Batman Eternals. Now, some of the Batmans do have multiple.
The Detective you saw was The Future's End, which did have a multiple cover, the 2D, 3D.
Okay, fair
enough. Batman Eternal is the noticeable exception. 2, 3, and 4 don't have variant covers. And then the Batman Annual number 3, I think. But everything else seems to be that way. If we take a quick look at The Future's End stuff, the only stuff that placed in the top 1,000 were the 3D covers. So I stand by my decision of getting the 2D covers as being the more collectible variant. So yeah, filter the title addendum to Future's End.
Got it.
Not a single 2D cover there. Not surprising. People thought the lenticular covers were cool, so they went with those. I was cheap. I'm getting, you know, I'm still all in on the DC Universe. This saved me, $41?
Yep.
Minus DCBS discount, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Saves you 41 retail dollars.
41 retail dollars, exactly. It's interesting how, not interesting, it's telling how few different titles we have, though, at the top over the 100,000 mark over the course of the year. How many of those are either Batman, Spider-Man, i.e. flagship titles or characters, and very few, you know, one or so for Marvel or DC.
Yep.
And then just first issues, gimmicks, events, or something like that. And even events don't tend to stay above that mark. I mean, Forever Evil didn't place over 100,000 over the course of the year, and it had a couple issues come out. It had, I think, 5, 6, and 7. So the final half of that event. So I don't think it's so much event fatigue as too many things competing for dollars. Things that look like they may be high-profile launches are doing good, but not great.
Again, though, Forever Evil, for, you know, and like I said, it's only the back half. Mm-hmm. You've only got 5, 6, and 7. 6 is actually a little higher than 5. 7's the lowest. But they're ranked 44, 49, and 50. Very, very stable.
Stable, but I don't think 100,000 is an unrealistic benchmark for an event to hit. And this one kind of sort of tied into a lot of stuff, really only the handful of titles that got delayed because of it. You know, Justice League and a few things like that.
But again, we're talking about a book. The 3 that are on here are within 6 ranks of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Flip over to Original Sin, rank 7, 34, 41, 48, 52, 56, 59, 60, and 70. I'm not going to forget the annual and forget the 0 issue. Again, if you only look at the bottom 3, very stable, but nowhere near that 7 that issue 1 did. Issues 6, 7, and 8 have almost the exact same sales pattern, down about 500 units from Forever Evil, 5, 6, and 7. In the Original Sin's case, it's 6, 7, 8. Again, the last one being the lowest, the next to last one being the highest of those 3, and the other one in the middle.
What gets me is the Original Sin 0 was below all 8 of the regular issues, and I thought it was the best of the bunch.
But it was a 0 issue.
The 0 issue by a different creative team.
I agree with you. I agree with you on the, you know, personally, I enjoyed it the most. I think it was the best, yes. But I'm not surprised, you know. The annual's down there, too. You know, much like, you know.
They seemed superfluous, therefore people didn't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it seemed like a cash grab. In this case, it was a well-done story, you know, but was it intended as a cash grab? Yeah, probably. Yeah. But if you loosen up the search just a little to literally Original Sin and that's it, to where you also get the miniseries and the Original Sins miniseries.
Yes.
Below that annual, we've got predominantly the Thor and Loki 5 issues, with the first of the Hulk versus Iron Man within there.
Yeah. But
Hulk versus Iron Man didn't do as well as Thor and Loki. And then the Original Sins was really at the bottom of the barrel.
What I find interesting, one, how many were there of the original Sims?
Five.
Okay.
So they all made the list.
Okay. Because five's at rank 996. If there was a six, it probably wouldn't have been on this list.
No, it wouldn't have. I don't see how it could have been. Unless it, yeah. It had, what, four slots left?
Yeah, exactly.
unless it bounced up slightly, which sometimes happens at the end.
Actually, it's interesting you say that, because I've always believed that, but we just kind of looked at the two big events that were this year. And in all cases, the bounce came with three to go.
We don't always see it at the end. It really depends on the nature of the event.
Yeah.
And if it's one where it makes sense, if I want to see how it turns out and the journey there doesn't matter to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Do they kill so-and-so? Do they keep this guy around? Who done it? And it's usually not a huge jump at the end, but a little bit of an uptick.
Yeah. But both Original Sin 7, which was the penultimate,
mm-hmm.
and Forever Evil 6, which again was the penultimate, got the uptick with the issue both that preceded and followed them being lower.
Yeah. And sometimes it just depends how they do, the solicits. Do they really give a good teasers? Okay. This is what you're really waiting for. The whodunit, maybe it's not at the end or whatever, because they need the big, aftermath battle or something.
Yeah.
What I really need to do to this list next year is add in the solicitation blurbs, because that would have been handy right now. But, oh well. The fact, though, that these events are not doing over the 100,000, not surprising, but a far cry from, the Civil War, Blackest Night days.
Yes.
With Multiversity, Original Sin, Forever Evil, X-Men Access, or Avengers X-Men Access, we've got enough event-like things, and you could quibble as to whether some of these truly are events or not. The fact that they're not staying up on the charts and stuff is unfortunate. Another one that had a precipitous drop was one that I think Marvel really did some shenanigans on, and that was the Amazing Spider-Man Learning to Crawl miniseries. That was issues 1.1 through 1.5 of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, I remember. Now that you mention it, I remember that. I remember skipping them all, but yeah, I do remember them existing.
I in my number crunching, pulled them out as if they were literally a mini-series, because it just was, the chart was bouncing up and down, and chaotically, it was meaningless.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one did, the 118,448, and by the end of the fifth issue, it was down to 64,772, which is still really good sales.
Yeah.
It's at rank 182 for the year. But again, it's a far cry from where it started. And I think Marvel is doing enough of those sorts of shenanigans that people are getting a little wary. That's why the Thor and Loki and the Hulk versus Iron Man miniseries that were kind of embedded in Original Sin, nobody was really surprised or not surprised, faked out by that.
Yep.
It's like, okay, you're just cheating on how you're marketing this to think, to sucker us in. It's not a good way to treat your audience.
Yeah. The other thing, for as much as we talk and you and Drew talk and, we kind of all talk about it, the strength of Image.
Mm-hmm.
If you filter out DC and Marvel,
okay,
you're left with a fairly interesting list. What's really interesting is next, filter out Robert Kirkman and Scott Snyder.
Okay, I will try to do that. Let's see.
Take out Walking Dead, Outcast, Thief of Thieves, and Witches.
All right, give me just a second.
Only four books.
Outcast and Witches. Okay.
It's amazing how quickly this entire list dries up.
Yeah.
What
I found interesting was that for Dark Horse, which is, I think, entering a transition period,
mm-hmm.
the stuff they had on the list was all six issues of Serenity,
mm-hmm.
which did well for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the Lucas draft, the remaining issues of that Star Wars stuff that came out.
Yep.
And what was the other stuff they had? I think it was one of the other Star Trek titles. Let me filter this down to where it's just Dark Horse. It's easier to see that way. It was the Star Wars ongoing, 13 through 16. And of course, the eight issues they got of Star Wars, that's not going to be back. Serenity was a miniseries.
Yep.
At the moment, there's nothing that Dark Horse has that's, I don't want to say a lock, but a safe bet to say would be in the top 1,000 next year.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, that is true. They've done a couple of Firefly minis, and I think one OGN over the years, If they could somehow get an ongoing out of that, might it be stable? Who knows?
I don't think so. Because if you look at how Buffy went, at one point it was doing in the 90,000, it was hovering just below the top 10.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of season 8. They've done since 9 and I think started up 10. Attrition takes its toll over time. You know, that's to be expected. There's nothing wrong with that, but they need, and I don't think Serenity, Firefly should be done as an ongoing. When they've got a story, come, tell it, get in, get out, move on.
Yeah.
You know, I love Serenity. I love Firefly. Do I want to see a season 2 of Firefly? No.
Yeah.
Unless Wheaton says he can pull it off. If he does, okay, fine, I'm in.
But, yeah. But again, I just, you know, take out Robert Kirkman, take out Scott Snyder, take out Marvel DC. You've got one book in the top 200, and that's Serenity number 1.
Mm-hmm.
In the top 300, you add a group of sagas.
Yes.
And Life with Archie, which that was the one that was comic for. That was the one where they were doing, what were they? Those are fairly, what were those?
Was that the Death of Archie stuff?
Yeah, okay. So you got those two, Serenity. I mean, by the time you get to something that's not one of the people we've already eliminated, or Saga, or Serenity, or Archie, I mean, you're down to rank 359 with The Wicked and the Divine, number 1. You don't see the rest of those, any, you know.
If you take out Serenity and Saga.
And take out the number 1s.
And take out, that's exactly where I was going. If you take out the number 1s, you know, let's go ahead and remove the rest of Dark Horse, because we've already talked about that.
Yep.
You know, you hit, you're down below rank 700 after you get Life of Archie out of there.
Yeah. I mean, that's, for all we talk about how strong the indies are, when you look at a list like this, it really is amazing. And again, you can almost take out the Lucas drafts. Oh, you did that. You
I
took
did.
Out all the other Dark
if
Horse.
If you take out the number 1s, DC, yep. Marvel, and Serenity, the in other words, filter as we said, take yep. out Kirkman and
Snyder, and now Brian K. Vaughan with Saga, and take out Serenity and Star Wars.
Which I don't, I mean, licensed properties, yep. big name creators, that kind of stuff. You've got less than a dozen items on the list I've got in front of me now.
Yeah. And the top one is Jupiter's Legacy number 4 at 37,000 issues. Which you and Drew talked about on a recent comic, you know, was what, 7.5 months late?
It was 18 weeks late, should have shown up the day before Halloween 2013, showed up March 5th, 2014, and number 5 has just showed up.
Okay. So that's the one, yeah.
And the part that kills me is anytime you've got a delay, not anytime, but sometimes when you get a delay, as has happened with that one, I still haven't got my copy from DCBS. I don't know if their system just got a little confused or what's going on. You know, when you've got these things that are so egregiously delayed, I was just a little while ago before we recorded, going through my email, I had a press email from Image Comics, and it was talking about Danger Clubs number 7, 8, and 9.
Okay.
7 had an order code of September 2012.
Okay.
7 had an order code of January 2013. 8, which they just recently solicited, had an order code of January 2015.
Wow.
These are things that they're still coming out on the original order codes, and they're like 2 years old in two cases. Cancel it, resolicit.
Well, we thought, what was that one that we talked about within the last 4 months? It was, I believe, a Bendis creator-owned
Brilliant.
Icon book that
Brilliant.
Was still on the original order code. It was like 3.5-4 years old.
Yeah, it was Brilliant number 5, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that. You've got the activity over at Image. You know, I don't like it when books are delayed and that late. It's going to happen, fine. But they need to own up to that, cancel it, and resolicit it when it's ready.
Yeah.
Because it is hideously unfair to retailers to have something sitting, you know, tying up their cash flow, sitting on their books for 2 or 3 years, and then say, okay, this is stuff you ordered back when the book was coming out monthly. You know, yes, your customer base may have changed a little since then in their intervening couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're stuck with those orders. That's just, even with the final order cutoff date, that's just not right.
Well, I gotta tell you, it's hilarious. I was and this, I'm gonna pick on DC, who for the most part's not that bad in this area, but in this case they were. I gave DCBS a shot for a couple of years, or mm-hmm. not for a couple of years, for a couple of months, literally 2, maybe 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I had long not been a customer, gone back to shopping locally, all of that. And literally one day, an envelope shows up on my door. It felt like 2 years after I had, you know, that month or so I tried DCBS out. Flash Rebirth number 6.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten about it, that I had ordered it through them.
Again, stuff floats around in limbo, and DCBS did the right thing, sent it to you, whatever.
No, they did it. But I paid for it. They sent it to me when it became available. They absolutely, it's not their fault in the least.
But anytime you've got a delay in terms of multiple years,
yeah,
any store that has a predominantly or sizable college crowd as their clientele, those people may well have graduated and moved on with life.
Yeah, also true.
Now, they may pick the thing up at some other store. That's awesome. But that's not helping the store at the college town that, you know, has new students who've never heard of this thing because, you know, it wasn't out when they came to college and discovered comics.
Yeah.
Which is the best reason to go to college, I think. Not that, you know, I'd long since discovered comics by that point, but still.
I was going to say, I think it more of a junior high activity, but okay.
I think these days, I would suspect, and I don't know this for certain, comics are skewing a little older.
Yeah, that's...
You know, people have a little bit more time and income, well, not necessarily income, but time in their college years. One of the other things we do see, if we start to look below the top 1,000, and we'll get back to the full top 1,000.
Sure.
Is we start to see Titan, we start to see some of these other publishers that have really just, I don't want to say come out of the woodwork, but I mean, they get crowded out of the top of the list. You know, we've got a lot of Doctor Who comics. Now, this is a hard thing to say is representative because I don't think it is, in so much as at this point, we're looking at anything that's small press or indie, whatever that means. So we're not getting all the publishers. We're certainly not getting Marvel, DC. We're getting, you know, huge gaps in some of the stuff. You know, we can skip, you know, a few hundred units between ranks here.
Okay, you want to talk crowded out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is shocking to me because I'm just looking for it now. Filter your list to IDW.
Okay.
What'd you find?
Let me put back the top 1,000 real quick.
Yeah, put back everything. Filter it to IDW.
I found one item. And I noticed...
Where'd you find it? Because I couldn't find the one.
965. It's Transformers versus G.I. Joe. It's the only item they have.
Listed as IDW?
Yeah. IDW Publishing.
What is it?
965.
Why do I not have that?
Do you still have the number ones filtered out?
No, I don't have the number ones filtered out. I had some of the titles filtered out. Okay, I have nothing filtered anymore. There it is. Why was it? Wow. Yeah, okay, it's one. I thought there were zero. You're talking about a premier publisher that almost got entirely squeezed off this list.
We were just talking about how Dark Horse, who's been around 20, 25 years, yeah. May get squeezed out next year if they're not careful.
And IDW very easily could have been this year and... easily could be next year.
You know, the only items, Titan, which is a newer comic publisher, I mean, they've been around a couple of years, but I think they've only really gotten serious in the last year. They had the first issues of the 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctor Who's.
But even those... Oh, yeah, okay, so those are over 1,000, yeah.
Yep,
okay.
All the others fall below.
So at least they would have got them in the list, whereas yeah. IDW doesn't qualify as a small publisher, so they don't get any of the below the 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
They probably fill many of those, well, not many, they probably fill a few of those missing spots we can't see below 1,000.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're talking, you know, like I said, a premier publisher, a front half publisher with a single item barely on the list.
Well, if you look at this list, taking out, again, Dark Horse, Image, Marvel, and DC and Dark Horse, and Archie, because we talked about Archie,
mm-hmm.
you've got, like I said, those three Doctor Who's, mm-hmm. The Transformers, who we talked about, Rye number one from Valiant, and Turok Dinosaur Hunter number one from Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is there's just so much coming out from some of these publishers.
Yeah.
Marvel had 510 items in the top 1,000. Yep. DC, another 407. There's, I don't say there's no room, but I mean, mathematically speaking, there ain't much left.
Well, and again, and this gets back to when you know, and you hear people talk, oh, I can't believe, you know, stores only carry Marvel and DC. Start looking at a list like this. Well, it starts to make a lot of sense.
What else should they cover and why?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's Image, really? Once you get out of Walking Dead, okay, Saga, I mean, there's one or two titles there, but the publisher in and of itself, it's a risky thing for stores.
Well, and like I said, once we did, you know, once you took Saga, Walking Dead, and Number One's out, you were pretty much out of the list too.
Yeah, and it's tough for creators, publishers to really be successful at that point when you've got such a competitive playing field.
Is that? See, I don't know if that's true.
Okay, how so? I'm seeing Number One's having a chance, but not really catching on. It's hard to get a foothold into the marketplace. I'm seeing predominantly the big boys, the successful, continuing to be successful. I'm not saying you can't have cases like Walking Dead, where some guy comes out of the bushes 10 years ago and says, you know, hey, I'm going to do this, and hits it big. Now, it took him 10 hard years, or 10 plus years, and he's been working his butt off.
I guess the question is, do you have to make it to the big two level to be successful? I'm trying to think of other industries.
That's an excellent question.
You know, I'm a musician. There are niche guitar makers. You know, you could do the same thing with a list of, you know, electric guitars. Gibson and Fender would be Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean there aren't some outstanding instrument manufacturers out there that are well-known and well-respected, but let's face it, they're never going to be Gibson or Fender. Beers. No one's catching Budweiser or Miller. No one.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean there's not a vibrant and beautiful craft beer market out there that there are individual brewers doing quite well for themselves. They're not going to compete with Budweiser, but they're doing well for themselves.
Well, and I don't think every publisher is or should be trying to compete with Marvel and DC.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or be the next Marvel and DC, I guess, is the way to do it. Because whether they want to or not, they are competing with them.
Okay, yes. But that doesn't mean you can't find a niche and be successful enough to meet your goals and carve out a nice company and a nice living for yourself.
Yeah. And I think many of these publishers have done that. You know, Titan is not out to go do, you know, 40 or 50 titles a month or something. Neither is Valiant or some of these other publishers. And I think that's good. I'd like to see the success kind of spread a little bit more to where we're not so heavy in any one particular publisher's pocket. You know, if some publisher has a rocky period, Marvel, say, going bankrupt, you know, bankrupt like they did once. You know, that was a point at which, had Marvel stopped publishing for even a month or two, that would have had such reverberations in the industry as to be, you know, cataclysmic.
Yeah.
Just because the cash flow issues in it would have, you know, bounced through. It would have taken out, I think by that point, the distributors were more or less, I forget where the distributors were at that point.
The distributors already all killed. Marvel had already successfully killed off all the distributors.
That's right.
They put themselves out of business doing it, but.
But, you know, hey. But it would have not only, you know, it would have impacted Diamond because, you know, a third to half of their cash flow would have been gone. It would have impacted DC because, well, you know, as their distributor and their retail outlets, chains and stuff where they're selling the stuff, are those going to survive? It's good to have a wider base footprint or distribution of things. Oh. You know, the fact that these are all mom and pop, you know, retail outlets by and large, you know, and that's, I say that and I don't mean anything condescending. These are privately held companies that are usually one store or a few stores. There are some that are big and have a chain of quite a few stores, you know, a dozen or two or something. That's great. But that's more the anomaly. And having this so widely distributed across so many different people makes it, you know, a more stable market in a lot of respects. Because, you know, if a store goes under, that sucks, but it's a store.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, gosh, Borders is no longer around. Yeah. That fundamentally changed the footprint of bookstores in the mass market.
Yep.
You know, and that caused major reverberations in the manga side of things. Let's go quickly
kind of
publisher by publisher.
Okay.
We've talked about Archie, which had Life with Archie. It had the first issue of Sabrina at rank 443 with 48,208 units. Archie, while a lot of their stuff is kind of below the radar often, they've been doing some really good stuff trying to become, I guess, more relevant is a good way to phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
With the Black Circle stuff coming out in 2015, we may see more of them on the list. It's certainly, you know, this is a growth pattern they've been having for years in terms of changing their image, revamping stuff. They're redoing, which title was it? Was it the Archie title itself or one of those where they were going to have Wade and somebody else kind of revamp it?
You know, I
don't remember. I'm not reading Archie.
I I believe it or not, I still pick up some Jughead Double Digest occasionally at the supermarket. But yeah, I almost don't think of them as comics.
And I think they're working to combat that.
I read them with my kids that, you know, I pick them up at the supermarket, not the comic shop, you know.
But I think they've acknowledged that, they've accepted that, and now they're challenging that.
Yeah.
So we're going to see changes there over the coming years, potentially a lot of that within 2015.
And since we did get a lot of it, there's a large chunk of Sonic the Hedgehog that's in the 2300 to 2500 rank list that's kind of on, you know, what we can see since Archie got put on the small publisher list.
Mm-hmm.
Again, stable, not, I mean, you know, 9,000 issues, 9,000 copies of each issue. But again, they're stable. And, you know, we always talk about how nothing lasts. You know, these are issues, you know, in the 250s and 60s.
It's funny, though, that Archie, which has tons of house properties, is got most of the items on the list with a licensed property. Because Sonic's owned by Nintendo, isn't it?
Sega, but yeah.
Sega, sorry.
But Life with Archie's all above that.
True, true.
And but Afterlife with Archie, which is kind of a zombie take on their character. Yeah.
But the majority of the items we have visibility into, and again, most of this is below 10,000.
Yeah, is Sonic.
Is Sonic.
I've never read it, but I've been hearing people for 10 years tell me it's if you're into it, it's very well done.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't stick around this long if it's not.
Yeah.
It is not, but a few years shy of lasting longer than Cerebus or Hellblazer or pretty much everything else that's ever been published other than, you know, a handful of perennials that have all been rebooted ever since, you know, since.
Speaking of it, and I realize we're a long way in only like the high 130s,
mm-hmm.
is Robert Kirkman the guy who can finally match Dave Sim and put out 300 strict consecutive issues by himself?
He certainly has a chance, but that's another 200 and, you know, almost 170 or something.
It's 150-ish.
150, whatever.
Yeah.
Even with a faster pace, you know, 17, 18 a year, if he were to keep that up, it's a ways off.
Yeah.
It comes down to, by that point, does he need to? Does he want to? And if so, does it become something that's still selling like it is? Or does it kind of go like the Savage Dragon route where it may as well be a vanity press project?
That's true. Okay, Eric Larson's another guy still doing, you know, Spawn I don't consider anymore because Todd hasn't really done much of that book for a long time and he's bringing in new writers and,
Eric Larson with Savage Dragon is still doing it, has been the entire time.
He's in the 250s?
200.
200, okay, so he's still got 100 to go.
But it's not selling great. He's doing it, I think, as much because he wants to as anything else.
Well, by the last 50, was Dave Sim really selling anymore either?
Fair point. I'd have to go look that up. Dunno.
But
but people were still talking about him.
Oh, yeah. But, well, because of that, it's amazing. If I'm not, he sat down, I mean, issue one or by issue like 20, he said, I'm doing 300, and he went out and did it.
Mm-hmm. Got to respect that.
Yeah. For all the things, you know, Dave's an interesting guy and controversial guy, but man, said, I'm doing 300 issues, and he did it.
You know, and was still selling at the end, whether it was great or not. In fact, he didn't have to be paying people.
No.
You know, and it was still being distributed, you know, that says a lot.
Also, which he did all on his own.
Yeah. Let's see what we got from Aspen. We've only got one item there. It was down at rank 2475. First issue of Lola, XOXO. I don't know anything about that title.
I don't know anything about it.
Don't read much from Aspen. 9,294 units. That was back in April.
Are they still doing, and weren't they doing the executive assistant stuff, which you were reading at one
point? They were doing that. They've kind of put that onto hiatus for a little bit. I think the annuals and the February previews, and I think they're the publisher that picked up the Big Dog Ink stuff, Big Dog Press, whichever, Big Dog Ink.
Really?
I think so.
Big Dog's not doing it themselves anymore, huh?
They're doing it as an imprint, I believe, of Aspen.
Okay.
Let me pull out my handy-dandy previews here and double-check that, because there are far too many publishers for me to keep track of.
Yeah.
And when things like this keep bouncing around, I think I am mistaken as to who is doing the Big Dog Ink, because I'm not seeing it in previews here.
Okay.
Actually, it may be in the February one, and I'm looking at the January one. That could be the problem. I gotta get that next previews. should be coming out soon. Anyway, so one item, bounce over to Avatar real quick.
Interesting. A couple of issue ones, but God is Dead. Any idea what that is?
Yes, I've been reading that. I was reading that. I got off around issue 25 or so. Basic idea is somebody killed God. The pantheons are kind of back, and there's a bit of a free for all blood fest kind of.
You got off around issue 24, bimonthly?
Yeah.
Okay, because we got 6 and 7 here from February.
This thing was coming out just gangbusters.
Okay.
It was coming out fast and furiously, at least 2 issues a month. That threw me a time or two. I didn't see the second one in the order form, so I missed it. Had to say, hey, DCBS, can you send them? And of course they did. Mm-hmm. It just got to where it was just too gory for me.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, not your thing. But hey, for a publisher to put out, you know, close to 24 books in a year, that's pretty impressive.
Who started this? Hickman, maybe? Somebody created it and somebody else took it and ran with it.
Okay, so it had at least some name recognition.
On the first issue, yeah.
Speaking of name recognition, it'll be interesting to see, I see one of the crossed books is on here.
Crossed plus 100, number one, yeah.
Isn't Alan Moore taking a stab at some of that stuff coming up?
I believe so.
And it'll be interesting to see if that then makes this list at least a 300 list with a month that the first couple come out, and then if it shows up on this top list at the end of the year next year.
It might bounce like that. I don't know. There's not much from Avatar I follow. They tend to do a little bit more harder core stuff in terms of the violence and stuff like that than I tend to care for.
Yeah, I'm not as squeamish as you, but... Yeah, Crossed. I people tell me it's a great book, and I picked up one or two, and I just went, I can't do it.
Hey, there's an audience for it, and I'm glad there's stuff for that audience.
Yep.
But I don't need to partake of it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Bongo Comics had Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, number 20. This is, I believe, the annual Halloween issue.
Yep, it is, and it's a great issue, and it comes out every year consistently, and it's consistently good stuff with...
8,666 units, which is just kind of funny for a Halloween thing, 666.
Yep.
20 issues, though, of an annual.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive right there.
And even though none of them made this list, I mean, Bongo has been putting out that book year in and year out. It's a fairly high quality, you know, besides the Treehouse of Horror, just the Simpsons comic. Fairly high quality book. And... it tends to be a great refuge for your long-lost creators of your youth.
Mm-hmm.
You look at some of the names, you know, you pick up that book and you see names, you're going, you know, it's kind of like, oh my Lord, that person has fallen from the mountaintop to, hey, it's nice that he's still got a job.
I don't even think it's fallen from the mountaintop. Sometimes they've been pushed off and their phone calls aren't getting returned.
Yeah, exactly.
They've almost been priced out of some markets because they've been around.
Yeah.
Bongo's one of those publishers that is happy doing what it's doing, and it does a good job at what it does.
Exactly.
Which is predominantly Simpsons comics, not exclusively, but...
Aren't they doing the SpongeBob comics too now?
I think they are, but they used to do one or two creator-owned stuff. Gru was over there for a little bit.
Yeah. Gru fit in,
yeah.
And they are... They did Sergio's last series before he kind of went back to Gru at Dark Horse.
I think so.
The Sergio Aragonés funnies or whatever it was called.
Yes, they did. I believe
that
so.
That was Bongo.
Yeah. I mean, Bongo's basically, again, doing what they do, and they make room for a couple of things here and there, but they're not aggressively growing. They don't seem to want to aggressively grow. They just want to excel at what they do. And to have a title from 1995 on the list, staggering.
That
is probably one of the longest titles out there.
It and Sonic, the one we just talked about.
Yeah, and Sonic. You're right. Looking at Boom Studios, a bunch of different titles here. Everything from Big Trouble in Little China, number one, which had 27,194 units. All of this is below rank 1,000, though.
All of it is. The one that's consistently on this list, though, is the Adventure Time book.
Oh, yeah. They're doing well. If you look at most of the stuff on here, aside from Big Trouble in Little China, George Perez's Sirens, and Escape from New York, most of the titles you get are Lumberjanes, Adventure Time, Bee and Puppy Cat.
Hey, Rush Clockwork Angels made the list, number one, which I loved that book. But
a lot of these things, though, the Adventure Time Lumberjanes and stuff, they're doing really good with their kids line.
Yep.
That's, I think, one of their kind of anchor things, surprisingly. And I say surprisingly because they're doing some excellent comics across the board. I really enjoyed Cloaks. This, to me, Boom is one of those publishers that is just poised to really just do kind of what IDW did a couple of years ago, where it's like, oh yeah, they're around, whatever, and then suddenly, wow, they're in the front of the previews, they're selling, you know, significantly more, they've got more titles, they've just almost an explosive growth over a key period. Boom is at that point where it just needs whatever trigger event or whatever to kind of climb up that path.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, it seems like they had to start over.
They've had a couple of times they've had to retrench and regroup.
Because they were right about there when they had all the Disney and Pixar stuff, and then Marvel bought, or Disney bought Marvel, and all of a sudden all that got yanked from them.
But you know what's really...
Surprisingly enough, IDW ended up with it 2 years later, and Marvel never published any of it.
Exactly. I was going to say, it was not a foregone conclusion that it would go to Marvel. It's over at IDW, yeah.
Now, yeah, but yeah, but it disappeared from Boom pretty much instantaneously. And then I guess after a few years of Marvel thinking about it, they decided they didn't want to do it.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
They should have just left it over at Boom or done something with it. Letting it languish for 2 years was unfortunate.
And they had...
They had the superhero line with Stan Lee that fizzled after about a year. Mark Waid did a bunch of stuff for a while.
Yeah, they had the books Mark Waid was doing until he kind of quit. Wasn't he even listed as, like, publisher?
He was editor-in-chief, creative consultant, something like that. He was one of their key players for a while.
Yeah.
But he's the type I don't think you can pin down into an office desk job kind of a thing for too long.
Yeah.
That's just not, it doesn't seem to be his comfort zone. And frankly, as great of a job as he did at that point for Boom, and as a similar guiding force over at, I'm blanking on the digital comics publisher's name he's got.
Yeah.
Damn it. He's doing good stuff over there. That tells you how many digital comics I read. I much prefer him as a writer.
Well, and he did pretty good as an in-between. Yeah, I hate to bring it up, but wasn't he fairly pivotal with CrossGen when they were big?
Oh, yeah.
He was writing several of those.
Writing several of their stuff. Unfortunately, he was not their lead writer.
No, yes.
That was Barbara Kessel, who was a good writer.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's she doing these days? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's going on to other... you know, writing type stuff outside of comics or whatever, but, you know, it's one of those that the again, it was also with CrossGen, 9-to-5 desk job kind of a setting.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't seem to click with Waid. You know, and that's fine. You know, creative people on schedules, not going to work.
And I don't see any on the list. Have they simply ended, or are the Planet of the Apes books so far down they no longer make this list?
I think they're coming few and far between, but they or did they move over to IDW?
That's possible. Yeah, I know.
Boom had them at one point. We'll see when we get to the IDW.
Well, we've already done that. They've got one book.
Oh, you're right. Never mind.
We didn't get the small press stuff from IDW.
Fair point.
The under 1,000 list.
Cartoon books. Yeah, cartoon books. Let's take a look at that. That is Tuki Saves the Humans.
Yep.
Save the Humans. I have no idea what that is.
Yep.
10,259 units, not too bad. Rank 2321. We've talked about Dark Horse with Serenity and the Star Wars stuff.
The next one we haven't. And again, a single item, Squareyours?
Yeah. Devil's Due, to me, is a ghost of a publisher. It's one trying to come back from the dead. And I don't know how many people are particularly rooting for it. Nothing against Josh Blaylock or Devil's Due or anything, but... It closed down under not so great circumstances, not paying creators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's a little hard to forgive a publisher for. It's certainly not one that I think, wow, I'm going to go check out everything they do.
Comics gained a pretty nice group of creators out of there, though.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot of strong people out of that. Tim Seeley, Mike Norton, a lot of the Chicago crowd.
Yeah.
So, don't get me wrong. Devil's Due, back when it was filing on all cylinders with Transformers, G.I. Joe, and Mercy Sparks, all the other titles they were doing and stuff. Yeah, they did some great stuff.
Yeah.
It just, when it spun down, it did so really not so good.
Yeah, no, when it collapsed, it collapsed in a hurry, and some rather questionable decisions were made by some of the people left.
You know, it was, I think, too heavily reliant on the licensed properties. Easy position to get in, but not a good one to be in.
Yep.
We look over at Dynamite, a lot of the items it had on the list. Really, what, the top 10 of them? All number ones.
There's a ton of number ones. You know, one shows up consistently, though? A book, again, you and Drew talked about fairly recently, Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Red Sonja's on here, you know, issue 11, 12, 10, 9, 8, 7. I mean, it's on here fairly consistently, and then a bunch of number ones.
Well, and despite the issue numbers under a dozen for Red Sonja, they've been doing those comics for a long time, yeah, number of years.
And Kevin Smith's buddy, Mr. Flanagan's Cryptozoic Man, the two issues that came out of that made this list as well. From the TV show Comic Book Men.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be curious to see how Dynamite does in 2015. I was on board with a number of these things, but some of them are either spinning down or, like with the Flash Gordon stuff, the way they're doing the King miniseries and stuff like that, it seemed like a change in direction and something of a reboot, and it's like, oh, I don't need to stick around for that.
Were they the one, I'm trying to remember, because I can't remember ever consistently reading a lot of Dynamite. Were they the ones that had the Green Hornet, and 1 month we had one book, and 1 month we had 10 books, it seemed like?
Yes.
Yeah. They did that with something else I was reading over there, too.
They've done that a number of times, where they just oversaturate.
Yeah.
Got the property, pump everything out you can, move on. And that's not a good way to take care of licensed properties. And a lot of these things they've got are licensed properties.
Are they still doing all that public domain stuff that Alex Ross was so involved in?
They haven't done much with the Project Superpower stuff, but that's starting back up with Black Cross, which I believe was in the January previews. Okay. And as to whether they do more with that or not, don't know.
Yeah.
Jumping over to, let's see, we talked about Oni. The one title from IDW, so yeah, let's...
Oni's the next one we haven't Oni. Hit on. Bunker, a book I know Drew's talked about quite a bit.
Yeah, he seems I read to the like. First couple issues.
Yeah, and Letter 44, I know you both have talked about how you've enjoyed that.
Yeah, I haven't read a whole lot from Oni, to be honest. They're another one that's a smaller publisher that is picking their titles, I think, a bit more carefully, not just trying to flood the market again. Smart move.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people have enjoyed a number of their titles over the years. Everything here is under the rank 1,000, most of it under rank 2,000. Bunker number one's the only one that above 2,000 there.
Yeah, and there's only four. I mean, two issues of Bunker and an issue of Letter 44.
And Life After.
Yeah. Random House, I don't even think of as a comic publisher. I've never heard of this title. It's got one at rank 2,027, Annihilator number one. It looks like it was from September. I know nothing about it.
Random House...
Is that a manga?
Is a... The way Diamond sometimes reports the stuff is it'll put things under Random House because it's distributing it, I guess, to them. Or I'm not sure entirely what, because different publishers' works seem to show up there. If I look at the July stuff, this is actually from Legendary Comics.
Okay.
And it is a six-issue miniseries that I have really no strong recollection of. Let me see if I can pull up the solicit for what that was.
Yeah.
It was Grant Morrison. Original graphic novel Odyssey from the Extraordinary Mind of Grant Morrison.
Original graphic novel in six parts for that price point.
Yeah.
The definition of OGN changes so rapidly, it's so nebulous. It's almost common.
Yes. And, yeah, original graphic novel, it's 40 pages per installment. Okay. Yes.
Next, really, the only two we haven't talked about. Valiant, still not burned up the charts, but a ton of stuff in here in the rank 2000, you know, sprinkling between kind of 2000 and 2700.
Yeah, this is the one that benefited the most from having
from
the indie in the small list.
Yeah, we wouldn't have seen any of this, you know. Archer and Armstrong, Exo, Armor Hunters, Rye, Unity, you know, kind of what you'd expect to see on the Valiant list. You know, again, unfortunately, nothing really burning up the charts. The one book they did have actually cracked 30,000 was Rye number one.
Mm-hmm. We got number two at 17,199, so
Yep.
Some of it is they get people to sample. They're having a hard time getting people to stick around. And they've moved from some ongoings to a series of you know, perpetual miniseries.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that was about the time I kind of jumped off.
This is one of those cases, though, where, you know, if somebody's got four slots or whatever for Valiant, it just rotates which titles, but they can follow the universe. So not a horrible game plan. It drives me personally a little nuts just trying to keep track of what's what and what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird. I was reading pretty much everything but Exo.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went to the Armor Hunters and it became Exo, 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 everything, I dropped the whole universe, essentially.
That is the risk with doing crossover or event storylines.
Yeah.
It can push people out. from Zenoscope, this is another one that... you know, is falling below the radar, but they had Grim Fairy Tales number 100, which did 11,868, and then Grim Fairy Tales Oz number 6, and then the Grim Fairy Tales Warlord of Oz number 1. This is something that if you're into what they're doing, they've got quite a few titles coming on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I mean, it's still kind of the Grimm's Fairy Tales stuff. They've shifted. Last year was Alice heavy. This year is Oz heavy. They've started doing some horror-ish versions of that stuff. Yeah, Zenoscope kind of is what Zenoscope is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, I think most people that don't read them have a very different idea of what they are than what they actually are. But yeah, those guys, and as I've said for years, some of the hardest working guys in comics.
Yeah.
I, there's not a show anywhere on this continent that one of, you know, that Ralph or one of those two or three guys is not at seemingly every weekend.
Yeah, I went to a number of conventions in 2014, and they were there at all of them, I think.
Yep.
I don't recall Toronto, but I'm pretty sure they were there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're pounding the pavement. They're going after the audience where they're at.
Yep.
I really think that's it's expensive. It's time-consuming, but, you know, it's a smart move.
And, hey, they gave up finally at issue 100. But, I mean, Grimm's Fairy Tales, to put out 100 issues, not a small feat.
Not at all. Again, how many Marvel and DC titles are getting anywhere near that these days?
Yeah.
And they did it without relaunching, retitling, or renumbering. So, gotta appreciate that. If we look a little at the basic stats, we talked about how most of the list was Marvel and DC. Price points... Most of the items were 399 items, 577 out of the top 1,000.
Yep, and another 309 or 30%, a little over 30% at 299.
And then, so once you add in the 84 items at 499, that's like 97% of the list right there.
The only other thing that's over a percent, 20 issues or 20 items at 350 with 2% of the list.
Let's filter by that price real quick. Image and Dark Horse are the two there.
Yep.
And the higher selling ones are the Serenity ones by and large. Interesting.
So flip over to some of the breakdown type charts.
Yeah, let's look at the top comics by month workbook. Yep. I've got here, worksheet I've got here. What I do for this one is I kind of go through month by month and just kind of split the stuff between, you know, how's the top 300 comics doing by units, by dollars, and then break that down to Marvel, DC, and other. Someday I'll get energetic and actually split it out to some of the other publishers a little more detail-wise. But really, if you look at both the units and the dollars, there's some definite ups and downs. We were talking before we started recording about how July just usually seems to be a spike up, you know, over both June and August and such. Over the course of the year, by and large, there was an upward trend.
Yes. However, I gotta say, when you look at the 300 units by publishers, there's a slight upward trend for DC. Marvel's all over the place, more up than down, but kind of January and December, you're about flat. What I find interesting slash disheartening, the other one, actually the trend line's kind of down.
I take that as a sign, and I should have done the number of items on the list as well.
Yeah.
I think the other publishers are getting pushed out.
Yeah. But, you know, other represented, you know, about 2 million units at the beginning of the year. They're down to about 1.5 million. They represented about $7 million. They're down to about $6 million in retail sales. Yeah, so the other publisher line tends to kind of trend down.
And I would say, by and large, when it's going down, DC is going up. I mean, not entirely, but I think DC benefited more than Marvel from the where the money was shifting.
Yeah, well, Marvel, like I said, it's kind of flat at the beginning and the end of the year with three really big spikes throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas DC was kind of flat and then started spiking up towards the end, obviously, well, September.
September spike for DC. At this point, that's meaningless.
Yeah.
You know, they do the 2D, 3D covers or whatever their stunt du jour is going to be. And when we look at next year at the 2015 stuff, odds are Convergence is going to be an odd little bubble there for DC. Likewise, the Secret War stuff for Marvel. But these charts are going to be very chaotic or some such, you know, next year.
Yeah. Units overall for the year, again, you got some spikes in the middle, but I mean, you start about 6.8 million and you end about 7 million, so slight upward trend. Dollars, same thing. You start about 25 million and you end the year about 26, with a bunch of peaks kind of in between those two. It's funny. There's a bunch, it looks like a wave, and it just happens that January and December are both kind of back at the baseline.
Well, it's funny because on the dollars, it seems like a good month is about $5 million more than a not so good month.
Yeah, you know? Well, it looks like we had 4 months down under 25 million, and we had 4 or 5 months at about 30 million.
Mm-hmm. So it's the mercy of what comes out and stuff. I should also check which of those were 5 week months, because that skews it a little too.
Now, what
too.
I do think is really interesting, where you do see a pronounced upward trend, is the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Starts the year, you know, you're kind of drawing it, and you filled in the mean line here. Essentially, it starts at about 1,000, and by the end of the year, it's at 2,100, 2,200-ish?
22, we'll say.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fairly steady rise, meaning you've got to sell an extra 1,000 comics to just make the list by the end of the year, which, again,
it gets harder and harder to stay on the list.
Yeah. You know, like you said, you start talking about that, you know, maybe the reason for the downtrend on the others is they're just getting pushed out.
I think so. And for a while, Diamond was providing the top 400, and that certainly gave some great visibility.
Yeah.
But they decided to stop doing that. I'm not entirely sure why. And it's unfortunate, because I'm curious how this would have looked if I'd had a year's worth of another 100 items on the list.
Yeah.
You know, how far down is some of the stuff getting pushed? And then the ceiling, the top of the charts, all over the map.
Yep. And when you draw the mean line, it's virtually flat.
Edges up ever so slightly, but that's a mean line that's meaningless.
Meaningless. Yeah, it's at 20,000, and there's not a single month on that line.
Yeah.
Or really, not a single month very close to that line.
I think the reason it started lower than it ended is the first 3 months didn't really have anything doing great.
No.
And then we hit that Spider-Man number one in I guess it was April and stuff, which just had this huge spike.
And then you get the July spike and the September spike and,
you know,
October
yeah.
spike, which was all the number ones over at Marvel, right?
But you had, let's see, 8 of the months were all down close to the 100,000-ish range.
Yep.
So we're at a point where a lot of comics, I mean, looking at what tops the chart, very meaningless.
Well, and again, we keep talking about it, and we had misspoke, but now that it's finally out and you guys have reviewed it, you know, again, the big spike for Spider-Man took this list to 5, essentially 500,000 units.
Mm-hmm.
January is going to throw that way off.
Yeah.
I mean, we assume there's a number over 1,000,000 starting off next year.
When we look at the ceiling chart next year, what we're going to see is, again, that Star Wars number one topping the chart in January. It almost doesn't matter how things do after that. It's going to look like a downward trend.
Of course, yeah.
Because of one anomalous comic.
Yep.
And it comes, you know, do I ignore something that's that much of an outlier? Do I always go with the second issue, the 10th? What do I do? You know, it's hard to find what a meaningful metric is on some of that stuff.
But, you know, and now that the issue's out and you and Drew have talked about mm-hmm. it, I, as you guys said, I tend to agree, for an issue that's going to probably get at a minimum a 500,000 eyeballs on it,
mm-hmm.
they put their best foot forward.
Yeah.
They try.
They did right by the property. They did yep. right by the fans.
Yep.
And they they had a high benchmark to hit because of what Dark Horse had done over the previous 20 years. And they hit that and at least matched, if not exceeded. And that's really a judgment call depending on what you liked more.
And as someone who hasn't read much in the Star Trek comics since Marvel had it the last time.
Star Wars, sorry.
Since Marvel had it the last time, I don't think they let that audience down either.
Yeah.
You know, it fit right in with that stuff I'd been reading, you know, when I was 6-7 years old back in the late 70s.
Well, and what a great time for Marvel to get the property. What an unfortunate time for Dark Horse to lose it. With the new movies coming out, with it really getting back into the public eye in a big, big way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the most anticipated movie, I think, of the year or whatever. You know, I was reading a web comic where it was kind of the only wars that matter over at Marvel these days is Star Wars, not Secret Wars, you know, which is kind of funny and ironic, but true.
When is Secret Wars happening?
May, I believe.
Again, seeming ridiculous and odd. Do we know who the big bad is yet for that? Are we assuming it's the Beyonder again?
I am not making any such assumptions. I would be surprised if it is not, since he was the big bad of all the other Secret Wars.
Yep.
But...
it's just, isn't that when Age of Ultron, the movie, hits? You think you'd want to lead the people, particularly if you've got a huge film that's going to do, you know, a billion people are going to see. If, you know, as you pointed out, most of them aren't going to walk into a comic. But, you know, when you're talking that kind of number, if, you know, 1% of 1% walks into a comic shop, it would be very nice to hand them a thing. Hey, here's, but yeah, the middle of Secret Wars is probably not the place to do that.
Well, and going from a movie that seems to be, you know, dealing with, you know, particular, you know, core characters that are all radically different in the comics. You know, we've got Falcon as Captain America instead of Steve Rogers, a female Thor, the superior Iron Man. The Avengers, even if they weren't in the middle of Secret Wars, don't look like the movie Avengers. That's neither a good nor a bad thing, but anyone who comes out of these movies thinking, wow, I think I should check out the comics, they need to have an entry strategy, I guess would be the way to put it. You know, hey, you're coming off this movie, check this out. And that's hard to do. So I look at these numbers, I think by and large, it was a good solid year. It was the third best that we've had over the Final Order era, which started back in 2003.
When you say third best, is that going by the monthly? Is that going by the year-end list? What are we looking
That's
at?
That's going by the aggregate of the top 300 for the year.
Fair enough.
That's a good thing to clarify. Thank you. We had, trying to think, what was the two best years?
I'm assuming they're earlier on.
2013 and 2007. Seven
no,
being the best.
So, okay.
You know, it's...
So one early and then two late, so kind of a rebound.
Yeah.
The last 2 years and, you know... one quite a while ago.
We don't have January numbers for 2003, but almost regardless of what it did, that was the weakest year we've had. And then it gets towards a low point in 2010. But it went from 2003 kind of going up and up and up, a high point in 7, trickling down to 2010, kind of then back up to 2013, and now we seem to be kind of cresting down a little.
Yeah.
2015 is going to be an anomalous year. I don't see how it can be anything but that. Star Wars, starting out the year, already gives it an edge up over previous years. Big event at Marvel and DC with Secret Wars and Convergence. Archie making a play to get back in the superhero game. Image has a lot of new properties they're going to be coming out with. Titan is already going full swing with the Doctor Who stuff. If they can add a few other things to their list of properties, they could start making a real run for stuff. It's going to be a fun year to watch all this. It's going to be a great year to read comics, hopefully. You know, I read a ton of stuff, and it's interesting just how many things have potential just game-changing stuff on the horizon. And there's always, they're going to kill so-and-so, they're going to bring so-and-so back, whatever. It just seems the scope of which the companies are planning to do some of this is a little unprecedented. And hopefully it pans out. If it doesn't and it falls flat, ooh, man, that's going to be not so fun to watch.
I'm expecting it to be a pretty good year.
I'm expecting it to, but if both Marvel and DC kind of throw caution to the wind, continuity is whatever it is, who cares, it's all great, they're all fun stories, just read what you want, and kind of almost poo-poo on the, yes, you've invested this much in these characters, but so what? That could have a backlash. And if people are able to get their fix on superhero stuff through TV, movies, etc., you know, and this is an excellent year to be doing that, The comics, which are they are too expensive. If they don't respect their readers, they could have a rough year. I don't think we're heading down that path. I don't think it takes much of a bump in the road to get us on that path.
I think there's no danger of that before October.
I think there is as Convergence and Secret Wars hit. If those
See, I don't think it'll matter when they hit. If they come out and they're totally different, you know. But again, we'll see. You know,
you're right. It's the outside of that, not the input. You're right.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, if you essentially get DC doing a whole new 52 again, and Marvel for the first time in their history possibly doing the same thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, you look at that first 6 months of the DC New 52, that was a huge boom. So, I mean, now you're talking into early 16 before you have to really worry about it.
The problem is, if both Marvel and DC do that at the same time, I don't think that's sustainable.
Oh, it's not sustainable. But, we agree on that.
Even for the short term, I don't think it's not sustainable, viable. DC was able to get everybody to sample the books at the beginning of the New 52, just like they did with the 1 year later stuff.
Yep.
Because it was just another ho-hum month over at Marvel.
Yep.
But if Marvel's got a bunch of new number ones too,
yep,
which hopefully doesn't happen, if they both hit kind of that, I don't say the reset button, but the, you know, the music stops, everybody grab a chair kind of a deal, that's, you know, if everybody's looking for the new hit first title, first issue of a title they want to go read and trying to sample stuff, that's going to be a huge influx onto the retailers. They're not going to have necessarily the right stock on hands, and you could wind up with a lot of disappointed stuff. It could work out wonderfully. It's got a strong possibility of just being a major missed opportunity because both companies kind of went for the brass ring at the same time and blocked each other.
Yep, always possible. Yeah, I tend to think, based on what we've seen in fairly recent history, it'll be two or three phenomenal months for everybody. The issue is when it all shakes out, you know. Like I said, that's why I think October, November are much more interesting than the summer is going to be, if yeah, not all the way into December, January of 16.
Whenever the dust settles on this kind of stuff,
yeah,
we're quite possibly going to be right back where we're at now. Things are selling okay.
Yeah.
You know, which is just hilarious given how hard they work sometimes to really shake things up. Sometimes it just doesn't matter. Some of these titles are going to sell what they're, some of these properties are going to sell what they're going to sell. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only owes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or excuse, 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.